Most colleges today ask you to leave your faith at the front door. But at Northwest University in Kirkland, their door is wide open. Listen as NU's Provost, Dr. Sarah Drivdahl, describes how their approach to academics encompasses the whole person.
Christian, higher education has many different purposes, but I would say the most important thing that a university can do is to help students find their call and serve Christ to their fullest potential. And that is something that Northwest Universities and the Ivy League are doing, that we are so good at helping students figure out who they are, learn the information they need, become the people they need to be to really advance the kingdom of God. And when I'm in a classroom at Northwest University, we get to talk about not just this topic, but we get to talk about how Christ relates to that topic. We get to teach the whole person.
NU's application deadline for fall classes has been extended to June 1st. A Christ-centered college experience is still possible, and generous scholarships are still available. Apply today at northwestu.edu.
Don't mess with me, man. I am an American, and I am crazy.
I'm the dude, so that's what you call me, you know?
That is not right! That is not fair!
And now the fake news.
This is the Brian Suits Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Brian Suits Show. I'm Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian today. Thank you so much for being with us. Good morning to you. Out in New York, Columbia University canceled in-person classes today, and police arrested several dozen protesters at Yale University as tensions on U.S. college campuses continue to grow over the war in the Middle East. The moves at the two Ivy League schools came hours before the Jewish holiday of Passover was set to begin Monday evening. Police officers arrested about 45 protesters at Yale and charged them with misdemeanor trespassing. Last week, police arrested more than 100 pro-Palestinian demonstrators at Columbia had set up an encampment on the New York City campus. We got some audio here of some of these Columbia protesters.
Yeah, it's quite striking, and this is happening all over universities across America right now, in fact.
No, remember the 7th of October.
Never forget the 7th of October.
That will happen.
Never forget the 7th of October.
Not one more time. Not 5 more times. Not 10 more times. Not 100 more times. Not 1,000 more times. Not 10,000 more times.
You ready? 7th of October is about to be every day. Every day.
Pretty sick stuff.
The anti-Semitism in our country is absolutely sickening, incredible. I just cannot get over what's happening in our country. The University of Washington is now under investigation for anti-Semitism, along with some other universities around the country. And we're seeing this proliferate. Here at Yale, we got some more audio of some of the protests at Yale and some of the arrest warning from the cops.
Well, here's first the dulcet tones of some of the student body. At least I assume they're part of the student body.
We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. Total liberation.
Yeah, I mean, this is just unreal what's happening in our country.
Just for a little context, does anybody know the history of the song We Shall Not Be Moved? I mean, it was a slave spiritual, if I'm not mistaken. I think they're taking the words literally here, but I think it had more of a philosophical, heavenly bent in its original interpretation. I think they're talking more about, no, we physically won't be moved from our location, but the cops weren't having any of that. And so this was warnings on campus this morning from law enforcement.
The points of egress are High Street or Wall Street. No one will stop you from leaving. If you do not leave, you will be arrested. We will give you time to leave. If you do not leave, you will be arrested.
The left has gone out of control. We stand with our Jewish friends and neighbors. This is just unreal what's happening in our country. And it is the manifestation of what's been happening on our university campuses over the last number of years. And we're seeing this here locally, the University of Washington, and the anti-Semitism that's happening at UW. And we talked earlier about some of the professors, what they've said, who have been quiet, but have also now started to speak out and said, this is unconscionable. I would have never expected this to happen on our campus, even though things have gotten have moved more to the left, to the left, to the left. But now we're at a place where this is a real inflection point right now. This is a crossroads point at many of our universities in our culture about who we are and what we're going to be.
Barry Weiss had an excellent piece about the growing level of anti-Semitism in America. It's nothing new, historically speaking. There's ebbs and flows to just how big anti-Semitism gets for any given country. But the point she makes is that when you see it on a scale like we're seeing it now, it's an indication that a society is in the midst of decay. Yeah. And it's kind of hard to argue with her when you look at the historical record. It's very concerning and very disgusting.
Yeah. We've got some audio coming out of the Supreme Court. As we have noted, they are hearing today this this homelessness case out of Grants Pass. In fact, you know, Andrea noted this out in California, some of the auditing issues they're having. And this just got released as well that, you know, like down in Santa Monica, they approved a multi-million dollar apartment unit for the homeless. But an audit in California says they could not find $24 billion that had been spent on the homelessness crisis. They had an audit and there's just missing money, that billions of dollars that are just cannot be accounted for. And this is a real crisis about what's happening on our streets. Here's some of the audio of the Supreme Court justices this morning.
Yeah, this is a attorney for the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, arguing before the nation's highest court.
Like cities nationwide, Grants Pass relies on camping laws to protect its public spaces. These generally applicable laws prohibit specific conduct and are essential to public health and safety. The Ninth Circuit tied cities' hands by constitutionalizing the policy debate over how to address growing encampments. It's holding that the Eighth Amendment bars Grants Pass from enforcing its camping laws is wrong for three reasons. First, the Cruel and Unusual Punishments Clause governs which punishments are permitted, not what conduct can be prohibited. Second, no precedent supports the Ninth Circuit's rule. Respondents in the United States abandon its reliance on Powell. Instead, they misread Robinson to bar any punishment for involuntary conduct that's linked to a status. But Robinson held only that states cannot outlaw the status of drug addiction. It made clear that they can prohibit conduct like drug use. This court should not rewrite Robinson six decades later. Third, the Ninth Circuit's approach has proven unworkable. The Eighth Amendment does not tell courts who is involuntarily homeless, what shelter is adequate, or what time, place, and manner regulations are allowed.
And there was some back and forth between her and various justices.
That's the U.S. Supreme Court. Hey, April 20th is a considered a high holiday. That was Saturday.
Done. I see what you did there.
You see that?
Mm-hmm, that was nice. Subtle. Not so subtle. It's also Hitler's birthday. You don't want to neglect that connection.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's a high holiday for marijuana fans, but there's growing evidence that it's not as harmless as once believed. I remember this going back when it was legalized here. It's like this is not going to end well. Despite legalization across the country and widespread public approval, the federal government still classifies marijuana as a Schedule I drug. And that's led to limits on research regarding medical usage that could back up the evidence that marijuana is helping people. But there's becoming more and more evidence that this continued normalization is actually really hurting us. The research is backed by the efficacy of cannabis as some sort of medical cure for a broad variety of ailments is FDA approved. But there's, again, this evidence that's coming out now, the substance use disorder field are weary of touting the positives of marijuana usage without the data to back it up. And I tell you, Greg, this is something that we're seeing time and time again now. We're seeing, let's say, traffic accidents that are absolutely spiking across the region. And you know what the data is showing? The data is showing that this is because of cannabis usage. People are driving high. They're driving completely impaired. And it's hurting communities around our country. And people are starting to wake up and saying, is this something that we should actually be doing? Cannabis, there is, you know, I'm no expert on cannabis at all. But there are certain levels that you can experience when it comes to cannabis usage, and you go to these pot shops around the county, and some of this is absolutely hurting our community, hurting our city, hurting our country. I don't know. Are you a big toker?
A smoker, a midnight joker? How do the words go? The study from the end of February from the Journal of the American Heart Association uses data from nearly 435,000 American adults as an among the largest ever to explore the relationship between cannabis and the cardiovascular events. And so daily use of cannabis, predominantly through smoking is what we're speaking of, was associated with a 25% increased likelihood of heart attack, 42% increased likelihood of stroke when compared to non-use of the drug. Those are quite striking numbers. And I've kind of sort of come to this conclusion over the years, Tim, that if you're taking any kind of substance or agent, whether that be alcohol or traditional nicotine through a cigarette or marijuana, if it alters your state of mind, it's probably bad for you, whether it's in the short term with things like overdoses and involving fentanyl or, you know, methamphetamine, or these substances that are more pernicious over an extended period of time. One way or another, if it alters your state of mind, it's going to hurt you and your health. It just depends on how quickly and to what degree. And so we're finding that now with marijuana as it's become more adopted in a recreational sense across the country. And now the big question comes up is, does this, you know, result in more regulation or a backtracking in the recreational use of this by law, or just a general raising of awareness amongst people that use it to where they'll stop using it as much because now we have the hard data?
Right. We've got the data now. It's time to make the changes. I mean, it's really hurting our community. Hey, for our friends out in Redmond, we've got a Plymouth project that people are protesting about. They're showing up at Redmond City Hall. Back around the COVID timeframe, we had this first wave of Seattle moving homeless individuals into the suburbs. This started during COVID. King County Executive Dow Constantine, he spent about $400 million to purchase 11 hotels around the county that got about 1,600 rooms. And this, do the math, that's about $250,000 per housing unit. That was the Health Through Housing project. And this was locations in Auburn, Federal Way, Kirkland, Redmond, Renton. And nearly all these hotels were purchased without community input. Many received strong public protests, primarily due to proximity to preschools and the expected financial drain on city services. The Health Through Housing project has been hampered with many expensive delays as some locations need major renovations. You've probably heard about the Renton Red Lion and all that happened there. There's a massive fire that happened. Now there's a second wave that's happening right now. We're right in the middle of the second wave, and the region is seeing these homeless individuals getting moved into different suburban communities, and they're going to come onto the light rail. Ready, Greg? They're coming to you.
Okay.
But this effort, it's being led by Plymouth Housing. It's been a long-term receiver of government housing funds. Frank Chopp, the longtime Washington State Speaker of the House, he has pushed millions and millions of dollars to Plymouth Housing. I mean, they've really become, you know, over the years, when you heard Plymouth, you're like, oh, man, they're the gold standard. But as you dig into what they've been doing the last few years, it really is it's really opening some eyeballs here. So there's this plan for Kenmore, the city of Kenmore, which they rejected, the city of Kenmore, back in January. And then this plan moved to Redmond. They moved it, Redmond Mayor Angela Burney. They were going to give a $7 million parcel of land to Plymouth. They're going to build this new facility, low barrier housing. And many Redmond residents are shocked by this secret deal by the mayor. It's three blocks from Redmond Elementary and just a block away from Anderson Park. Safe Eastside, it's a volunteer group, and they're battling the mayor and city council's fast track of this project. And this group, they just can't believe that they're going to just fast track this thing through. It took Kenmore more than 2 years to study Plymouth's plan, and they held three public forums, and they rejected it. Now Redmond's elected leaders, they just took 22 days with meetings in, quote, executive session, meaning behind closed doors, to approve Plymouth's plan. And now, of course, Redmond citizens rightly are troubled by this lack of transparency, the low barrier, because they know it really means you can do whatever you want. I mean, it's the wild, wild west. So you're bringing active drug addicts into the facility right next to the elementary school. And I think folks have a right to really know what's happening here and really not want the drug addicts and the violence and the crime that's going to come. Safe Eastside, they're asking Redmond residents to contact their city council members to express concerns over the drug addicts, the sex offenders that are being moved right into their community. And if the project is allowed to proceed, these folks are saying it's vital for the city council to keep its authority over the facility and its residents. Democrat King County Council member Claudia Balducci, she's also a member of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. We talked about that last hour, that this might not even continue. We don't even know. Many are saying that this is a sinking ship. Balducci represents most of Redmond and has sided with what some call the Seattleites over the concerns that the city is exporting its problem to the suburbs. In fact, the council member wants to increase the number of social services available on the east side to attract even more homeless individuals to cross over Lake Washington. There's a lot of concern happening in Redmond. You're out there, Greg. I mean, this is a massive concern. What is going to get exported to your neighborhood?
Yeah, it's metastasized, no doubt about it. And it's been exported to the east side. I've seen it with mine own eyes. The problem here, though, Tim, is that these are elected officials making these decisions. In other words, you know, to work with the Plymouth Housing behind the scenes, whether or not it's out in the open or not. The key word there is elected. And until we start electing the wrong people to do the right thing, we're going to get more of it. I think of this Milton Friedman quote that's always been top of mind for me, given the political climate here around the Northwest. He said, "I don't believe the solution to the problem is to elect the right people necessarily. The important thing is to establish a political climate of opinion, which will make it politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right thing." So we can go out and protest and, you know, take up the signs and say, "We don't want this here. We don't want this here." But the best recourse is for these politicians to fear their future electoral prospects if they keep making these decisions. And right now they don't fear that.
Yeah, absolutely. And really criminals at this point, they don't, they're not fearing a lot right now in our city. I mean, that's do you like that segue there? It's happening across the county that there's just really this kind of broken windows effect that's happening. And we're seeing this play out when you allow a broken window to continue to be, not to get fixed. It really denigrates society and really becomes lawless, and people can believe they can do whatever they want to do without any fear of accountability, without any fear of justice. And we're seeing that play itself out, you know, across our county. Juvenile crime is spiked. Serious violent crime is spiking. We'll talk about that in a few minutes with...
That's one of the things I've loved about the show that you've put on this morning, though, Tim, is we had someone from the Seattle Beautification Project on who goes around cleaning up graffiti. We had Andrea Suarez from We Heart Seattle here. What do they have in common? Non-governmental solutions to problems that are plaguing our city. And I think that is, in essence, the answer moving forward here, because we can raise our fists and shout into the ether about the failure of so many of the leaders here on a city level and in a state level. But people taking matters into their own hands seems to be the best solution so far in helping to cure this region of a lot of the ills that continue to plague it. And I'm all for that. I don't know. You know, I frequent a lot of conservative circles, and the mantra seems to be, we got to get out of here. We got to get out of Seattle. This place is going to hell. And I've just seen it change so dramatically in the last 20 to 30 years. And we got to move to Idaho or Tennessee or Texas and have a mass exodus here of conservative minded people. I'm of the opposite of the opinion, which is we got to lean in. We got to do better, and we got to be a force for change here because it's desperately needed. And if not us, then who? And I'm not willing to just cede this area to the lawlessness and destruction. It's too beautiful. I have too much history here. There's still too many good people that remain that want to see this place thrive again and flourish. And so I just love the individuals that are going out there and saying, okay, government's not going to do it. We're going to do it.
Yeah, I love it. That. Good for Craig, man. Dude, you're on a roll this morning. Oh, my goodness. I love it. Hey, I'm Tim Gatos, filling in for Brian Suits. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Brian Suits Show. I'm Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian this morning. Thank you for being with us. And it's that time for the checking of the texts. Thanks so much for doing that today. What do we got, Greg?
Yeah, from the 206, a little love for you, Tim. Good morning, Tim. Thanks for sitting in for Spicy Brian. Nice to have a little change of pace today. From the 206 on the homeless issue, Tim, I think we've confused indifference for compassion. In Seattle, we see it as compassion to step over people that are committing suicide slowly. And from the 206 on the Bird versus Dave Reichert issue, it's a polarizing example of the differences that are creating the rift amongst Republican voters and independent conservative voters. The Washington State independent conservative voter will vote for a Democrat. Byrd will not win over those voters. Reichert can win them, but needs to convince the ride or die GOP voters to show up and vote for him. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is going to be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Right. There's still many months left.
There are many months left. And, you know, both have some incredible strengths for them. A lot of things going for them. I mean, I think the tides, if there's a year that there could be a Republican who can win it, I think because of what we're seeing with over the last 4 years with Biden, with what we're seeing with what we've seen with Inslee, and the authoritarianism, I think a lot of moderate Democrats, a lot of independents are seeing the government overreach and the government acting as God. And we saw this even recently. There was a Democrat pundit on MSNBC who basically said that verbatim, like, government is God, and people don't believe in God anymore. And so they believe that government is God. And they believe that government has the ability to act as God and dictate what we do. And they need to solve all the problems. And they need to tell us what the rules are and what we need to do. And that has become so true in our state of Washington. And we've seen this, you know, during the COVID time. Governor Inslee often was like, man, he believes that he is in the place of God. And he is ruling and reigning over us. And I think a lot of people are, a lot of independents, a lot of moderate Democrats are really frustrated by this government overreach, because the classic liberal doesn't believe in that. The classic liberal does not believe in the government overreach that we've been seeing over the last number of years with the Democrat Party. And then you go to Bob Ferguson and say, look at Bob Ferguson. Bob could actually be a lot worse than Governor Inslee when it comes to this authoritarianism and this overreach and this God complex. I mean, I've watched Bob Ferguson. I've watched how he has played himself in his cases and how he talks and how he acts. I mean, there is a it's fearful to think about what he would be like as a governor. And it's really fearful.
Text from the 206. Thank you, producer Greg, for your inspiring words. I'm a left-leaning guy who also grew up in the Seattle area and would absolutely join forces with my local conservative friends to make our city healthy. I say we lean in. Don't you think that's where we could find common ground? Because I think there's a binary choice here. One is you're of the opinion that the homeless population should be able to commit slow suicide and shoot up with needles and defecate on the streets because that's their definition of happiness. And we should all get to pursue our own definition of truth. And that's the chronically homeless's definition of truth. And then there's the sane sanity caucus that I think encompasses a large portion of progressives here and conservative, which says, no, a life well lived is one where a person is a contributing member of society and they're clean and sober. I think that's where we could find some common ground left and right here. It's only the far, far left that has somehow got most of the power here that has given us the situation that we currently live in.
Absolutely. There is those opportunities for common ground and finding the greater good in those things. You're seeing that, Greg, today. I mean, you really are. I mean, if you look at, I know we were trying to find this this quote that I saw recently from longtime Democrat Adam Carolla, who talks about, and he says, you guys left me, right? Like, you're talking about he's been a lifetime Democrat. He goes, you guys have left me. Like
Bill Maher says similar things.
Yeah, Bill Maher says the same thing. Like, I have the same kind of classic foundation that I've had, and I've been left. And so you see and hear about this more and more as time goes on. And I think there's a willingness to say, you know what, where can we find the commonality? And I think that's important to do. And I think when you look at the future of the United States and you say, who are we going to be in 20 years from now, in 30 years from now? Because when you look at it from right now and you take a step back and you say, if we keep on this same trajectory we're on right now with the vitriol, with the division, with the divisiveness, and you compound that, year after year, and you're like, man, I shudder to think about where we'll be. We absolutely need people willing to lean in, just like we had our listener say, hey, I'm willing to lean in. We need people to lean in and say, hey, we believe in this country. We believe in the United States of America. We believe that if we continue on the same road we are today with the divisiveness and the trajectory we're on, it's not going to be in a good place.
I think the spirit of the age, large in part, involves what my pastor calls slacktivism. And I think you can put under that umbrella voting every 2 to 4 years. Yes, it's important. It's a sacred right we all have in the United States of America to cast our votes. But what about the other 364 days of the year? Like, what are we doing on an individual level? And what we have is a lot of preaching on social media, a lot of lecturing, and a lot of I'm right, you're wrong, which is leading to more division and derision and less healing and benefit for our communities.
Yeah.
Again, election's important, but what are you doing on an individual level? Well, the Seattle Beautification Project is going out and it's cleaning up graffiti. It's actually, using blood, sweat, and tears to go clean up the city. We Heart Seattle is going out, talking to the homeless, cleaning up these camps, trying to get people help. That's anathema to slacktivism in the best way possible.
Well, it's why I wanted to have them on the program today, because when you look at what are the things that are going to bring change and transformation, who are the political leaders that, for you, Greg, right now, today, are your role models?
A lot of them are leaving Congress.
I mean, who are your role models?
Oh, I mean, I loved Ben Sasse when he was in the Senate. I actually voted for him for president in 2016, but he had it up to here with how politics was going in America, and then
I'm saying currently,
the state of Florida.
Currently, who are your current role models that are like, you know what, this person is an example. Is some we need to model ourselves after this person, and really kind of lean in, because that. We need to kind of rally around them. Not that they're going to be a person who's going to be the, you know, we're not going to, we obviously have our savior, but who is it that is?
Well, look, I think we get the politicians we deserve and not necessarily the politicians we need. And like I said, I think a lot of the ones that we need have gone away, are going away. I liked, Nikki Haley as a choice for president. I think Dave Reichert would be a great leader for the state of Washington right now. I like my representative, even though he's a Democrat. I think he's a large in part a sane Democrat. Adam Smith on the national level. Again, don't agree with him on everything, but yeah, I'd put him in the sanity caucus for sure. So there are good people in the system, but the loudest voices and the ones who seem to garner the most media attention and have the most power are the ones I tend to like the least.
Yeah. Friendly. Yeah. The problem too is in the US right now, we, unfortunately people want to kind of brand themselves and they want to be able to kind of make a name for themselves. We see this time and time again where, oftentimes politicians really are in it for themselves, and it's rare to find someone who is not in it for really the common good, right? For really our country. Oftentimes in being involved in kind of the political stream for a number of years, you kind of step back and you look and you say, man, why was that person in it? What was the motivator? What was the agenda? And it would be phenomenal to really have a city, a county, a state, a country, you know, full of, you know, representative leaders that, you know, are really in it for, not for themselves, but they're in it for, you know, our country. They're in it for, you know, our communities, and not as a ladder for them to build their resume, to build their brand, to build what they want to do. We need, you know, the selfless example of models that we've heard from today. And I tell you that is the kind of person I'm really hoping that, can step up in the years to come. Greg, maybe someone like you.
No.
Would you ever run?
But don't you think though, that the current system in place in terms of the vetting system we have for our leaders, you know, there's sort of a ladder that is climbed, you know, to positions of power in the country. And right now, unless you're tribalistic and cutthroat and nasty and willing to sell little parts of your soul along the way, you won't get to those positions of power. For whatever reason, I think the system has been shaped in such a way in the modern age to reward the worst part of human impulses rather than the better angels of our nature.
Yeah. Hey, stay with us. We'll take a break. This is Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian Suits this morning. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian Suits this morning. Thanks so much for tuning in here. And Glad to welcome our Seattle City Council President Sarah Nelson with us. You know, we've seen some incredible growth happening in our city. We've had a lot of challenges over the last number of years. But when we look at what's happening with the mayor's office, with our city council and our city council president, I think there's a lot of good days ahead. Council member, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, and thanks for joining us. And, you know, one of the things that when I look at where we're at as a city and say, okay, we've got to kind of figure this out. And this happened recently to me. I had had my car prowled, and I had my daughter's, you know, computer and a bunch of other stuff was taken. And I went to file a police report, and I was on hold 4 different times for about 30 minutes to file a report. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't file a police report because it took too long. And I think when we look at what's happening, there are an amazing things happening. There's great progress right now and great direction with the new city council, with you and your leadership position. But the staffing levels of the police and the deployment officers is, I think, perhaps the number one issue that we're looking at right now, in my opinion. Where are we at with police staffing levels? Where can we move towards to get more police to be deployed? Where are we at on that?
Well, you're absolutely right that the most important thing to addressing our public safety crisis is to hire more police and to bring our staffing levels back up. Here's where we're at. We have lost about 700 sworn officers since the beginning of 2020. We are still in negative territory year after year, which means that we're losing more officers than we are hiring. For example, in 2023, we lost 97 officers, either through retirement or going somewhere else, but we were only able to hire 61, and that's a negative of 36 officers. The year before, it was even worse. So you're absolutely correct that we absolutely must. It's of utmost urgency to hire more officers. And what we've done right up to now has not worked as well as we need it to solve everything from the car prowl to the homicide. And so that is the state that we're in. But I will strike an optimistic note that you led with, which is that we do have a different council, and that gives me some reason for optimism.
Yeah. You know, it feels like it's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing in the sense of, okay, we've got to get more officers in, but do we, you know, change the standards or the protocols to get, you know, the right officers in? I was talking to a longtime friend recently. He was a former assistant chief and captain with SPD for 30 something years. And he was noting that there's been maybe some changes in kind of the standards of who we're hiring. And he noted that someone who was recently struggling with a heroin addiction was, you know, going through the process. And I don't know, you know, if that's, I don't know any details about that or if that's accurate, but I guess the general question is, are the standards changing? Because again, the chicken egg thing of like, okay, we've got to hire more officers quickly, but what kind of officers are we hiring?
Here's the thing, Tim. No, we are not changing our standards. I have legislation that will make some no-brainer improvements to our hiring process and also align our overall recruitment strategy in a chain of command, an accountable chain of command, with one person leading the three-person team to develop innovative approaches. So I do have legislation that is addressing how are we recruiting and how are we hiring. Let's fix this, because Seattle is different in many ways from neighboring jurisdictions with whom we're competing for a limited pool of potential recruits. But one thing my legislation will not do is lower our standards or compromise our commitment to constitutional policing as set out in the consent decree that we're still under.
Yeah. Where do you think we'll be in 2 years from now? What's your best projection? How many officers can we hire in 2 years?
Well, okay, so the goal is, I believe Mayor Harrell's goal is 1,400. We're at about 930. I'm not going to say that we've hit our goal in 2 years, but we'll have more. How's that for, how is that for a number? Here's what matters is that we fulfill our charter duty. When in Chapter 6, Section 1 says that there shall be adequate police protection in every district of our city. We're working toward that. We will have better staffing levels in 2 years than we do now, but I feel the same frustration and urgency that my constituents are expressing when they talk about the persistence of crime going right now and going forward.
Yeah.
So that's what we're dealing with, and it's leave no stone unturned when we're talking about how do we fix this problem, and simply pointing to other cities that are also struggling with a tight labor pool and saying, oh well, what can we do? You know, that's the sort of implication. We don't go there. Because we are Seattle, we are creative and innovative, and we are going to fix what we have under our control, which is our internal processes, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, and part of it is changing the tone and tenor of the culture there, because I know, you know, many have left to other agencies because they didn't feel, you know, appreciated or respected, and I can understand that, right? If you're working in a department or a culture where you don't feel appreciated or you don't feel respected, then you probably are going to move on. And with your leadership and the new council, that tone and tenor is changing, but you still have, you know, some of that existing. How do you continue to change that?
We have to prove ourselves now. So what you're, the low morale that you're addressing is, you know, an outgrowth or is a product of the, I believe, of the early day, well, of 2020 movement to defund the police. The chief left the force, and you know, if your boss said, I'm gonna lay off 50% of you, and you had a mortgage and kids, and so wouldn't you think about getting a different job? So there is still a vestige of that. And there are a lot of other things. There is our relative compensation for our officers compared to, you know, adjacent jurisdictions. So there's a lot of things at play with our situation. But we have, council members have to prove themselves to be different. And this is what my colleagues are doing. First of all, we've got a public safety chair who actually cares about public safety. And a number of my colleagues have gone on ride-alongs and roll calls in the first, you know, quarter of this year, months into their term. So I have to say that we are trying, but we have to prove it.
Yeah.
By really consistently showing that we are partners in this effort to keep our constituents safe.
And for anyone who's listening, who's like, hey, I want to jump in and be a police officer. We should promote. Where should they go? Where can they go to seattle.gov?
God, you got me there.
I think it's seattle.gov. Yeah. There we go.
Or at least the Seattle Police Department. I'll get back to you on that. I have been to that site on the SPD webpage. But consider a law enforcement career in Seattle. There are a lot of changes underway right now that will improve the conditions, and we, it's all hands on deck.
Seattle City Council President Sarah Nelson, we appreciate your leadership. Thank you for what you're doing for the city of Seattle, and I look forward to talking with you again in the future.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, it's been such a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Tim Gatos. I've been guest hosting on The Brian Suit Show. I hope you have a great day.
Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.